Yeah. I'll be like, the alien will walk in, I'll be like, everyone, this is the xenomorph, his taxes are this.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Brothers Movie Factory. I'm your host, Ben, with me, as always, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory.
Ashes, milky blood.
Hey, I'm not going to talk to you at all during this episode until we talk bonuses.
Right.
Every time he says anything, you just say right.
Right.
Fuck you. Anyways.
Right.
Indeed. We are the Brothers Movie Factory, and joining me, as always, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory, Gus, over there. And here we are once again, finding our way back to another iconic movie. A movie directed by a man that many would say I despise more than anyone in the world.
Dennis Quaid?
Yes, directed by Dennis Quaid. Indeed, we watched Aliens this week.
No, we did not.
Alien. Alien 3. No. Alien versus Predator.
Is the next Alien movie filmed in Pittsburgh called Aliens?
Aliens, yes.
Aliens.
And that.
That's a sequel to Aliens.
Aliens and that.
That means there's more of them.
Predator. Alien versus Predator.
Come on, Dan.
Indeed. But what we do here, if this is your first time coming on board the ship, I don't think we've ever called it that before, but the Nostromo. Indeed, we watch a movie every week. We then take to the pod to discuss that movie, what we liked, what we didn't, what worked, what didn't. We then submit that movie to the factory. That's where we take the film we just watched, and we imagine what it would look like if it came out today. Who would direct it? Who would compose it? Who would star? Same story, same everything, really, other than the booking, modern booking, different directors, different actors, actresses involved. Who would star if it came out today? And then we have a little bit of a questioning time at the end. So, with that being said, as we are, again, into a new year, we decided to kick it off with a big-time movie. I mean, this is a big, probably one of the most iconic science fiction movies.
Certainly one of the most beloved as well.
Beloved, iconic, yeah, we watched Alien, which is interesting because this is one of the few movies where I actually remember the last time I watched it. And it was in high school. I was in high school, and I don't know why. It was very late at night. I was home alone, and I decided to pop in Alien. And I was, as I was watching it last night, falling asleep in my beddy-bye, I thought to myself, I remember the last time I watched this, and I remember I didn't get past this opening credit sequence. Like, as the A is, like, coming up and everything. It was just so long and quiet and peaceful and drawn out.
I thought you were saying it's too spooky.
It's so boring and Ridley Scott-esque.
I watch and I'm like, this is so Ridley Scott-esque. It's amazing.
And I watch and I'm like, this is so Ridley Scott-esque because it's boring. Now, I personally do like Alien. I think it's a very good movie. I have watched it several times. And I think Ridley Scott is a boring man with boring ideas, I think that his style of, like, slower pacing kind of deal, which I don't know if that's actually his style. Would you agree? His movies do have sometimes have, like, a slower pacing to them. They're a little more, they let themselves kind of tell the story and build and whatnot.
Yeah, I would say it's paced in a way that just allows it to feel more organically to a build.
And that benefits this movie because it, It's just constantly, even that beginning, that the title screen with just the air, it's aerial font, and it's like just so straight and narrow, alien, very slow. It just, it's eerie, and it builds and builds and builds, and it's just constantly building and building because it's slow paced, but you never really feel bored right from the get go.
Right, unless you're in high school trying to fall asleep, apparently.
Well, I mean, come on.
Or was this last night when you were watching it?
Last night, I made it to when
the
when they were landing the ship on the planet, and old wifey was sleeping. And I think she was sleep-talking, but she woke up and went, "What are you watching?" As the ship was, like, crashing. And they're like, "Shut that off!" Like, Jesus.
I was watching this with roommate Matt and I don't know.
Girlfriend.
I don't have a nickname for my girlfriend. The
girlfriend.
Sweetie.
No.
The girlfriend. And I looked at Matt and I was like, Sigourney Weaver is the most attractive woman of all time. And Margo's like, "What are you talking about? She's so fucking cute."
Like, I don't know if I would describe her as cute. I do. As I've grown as a man, I have come to just I love Sigourney Weaver. She is amazing in everything she's in. Like, she adds such a, I don't know. I like even like in Cabin in the Woods, where she's such like a minuscule character. Spoilers. She's great. She like even in Finding Dory, when she's just a voice. Perfect. Oh, we lost him again. He's going to have fun editing this one. But while we wait for Gus to get back, I'll tell you what I think of this movie. So, Ridley Scott, I have many an issue with Ridley Scott. He's trying to come back.
Can you hear me at all?
Now I can.
I lost you after you're talking about Sigourney Weaver, and it was very frustrating.
Well, I was just going to keep going because I realized as I finished my point on Sigourney Weaver that you were not there, because no. I said even in Finding Dory, she adds a level to that as a voice,
a level of attraction.
I mean, she's just a voice. She's a voice. She's Sigourney Weaver. She's their guiding voice. And then I was about to just go on a rant about Ridley Scott because I knew I could get away with it with you not here to defend him. But you came
he's
back.
Not even here to defend himself.
You came back and interrupted me. I'm like, "So what I hate about Ridley Scott?" And you were like, "Hello." I'm like, "Fuck."
Not so fast. Turns out we're not reviewing Alien. We're reviewing Blade Runner.
Jesus. If I could get through it, I would.
You will one day.
Yeah, it'd take about 8 years.
We'll do it for your birthday.
No. It's not that the movie sucks. It's just not good.
You're talking Blade Runner,
yes,
correct?
Yes, Alien is good. Alien is good. And my natural Western Pennsylvanian in me makes me want to just always call it Aliens, though, just because. It's like you're like, "Oh, where are you going?" "Oh, I'm going to Aldi's." It's Aldi. Like, shit like that. Like, I just want to call it Aliens.
Yeah, I think I called the store JCPenney, JCPenney's my entire life.
Yeah, that's just a thing. I don't know if that's our mother or Western Pennsylvania, but definitely our mother. But, yeah, so I want to call it Aliens all the time, but it's Alien.
Well, if you say Aliens, I'll either correct you politely or make fun of you aggressively.
Or cry because it's not Aliens that we watched. But we'll get to that. That is a question I have for you later. But this movie, like I said, with Ridley Scott's pacing being a little slower, it does definitely assist in the suspense of this film. And what's interesting is, like, the opening is so drawn out and slow, and it doesn't even do anything necessarily. It doesn't introduce anything, I'll say. It doesn't introduce anything to give you suspense. Because really, in the trailers, right, for this movie, they didn't even show off the alien or anything, right?
I mean, I'm not too sure on that fact, but I do know the the alien, what we later learned to be known as a xenomorph, only has about 4 minutes of screen time. So I imagine they did not show it in the trailer.
And but that's what I'm getting at, though, is like, yes, with that opening shot of like the planet, and it's like slow panning, and the title slowly popping up, and there's the credits, like the opening credits underneath, and then it goes into the ship, and it's like slowly panning through the ship. It's very dark, and there's bleeping lights, and then people are waking up. Nothing has been said, but there's suspense being built from that, right? Yes. And that's really good. Like, you just know, you're like, oh, this movie's rated R, and it's called Alien, and it's in space, and it's dark and spooky.
Somewhere there's an alien. Yeah. What I like, and what I've grown to like more and more with each viewing about this opening, is that slowness, because it allows you time to take in and appreciate the art direction of this movie. The set design, inspired by Swiss artist H.R. Giger, and just very unique looking just set pieces that look amazing even by today's standards, if not better than today's standards. And it's all practical. It's all real. It's all good.
Yeah. Something that I liked was when it, like at the beginning, when it's going through the ship, there was a lot of things, and it's funny because just a little precursor to this, we'll talk about this toward the end of the show, but something Gus and I did in preparation for this, something that we've wanted to do for a while, is we recorded some gameplay videos of us playing through Alien Isolation. So we'll be posting those, and I'll give you some stuff on that at the end of the show, you spit listeners out there. But we were playing through it, and there was a lot of things in watching back that gameplay footage that, and then watching this movie, that I was like, that was in, like, the in the very first level, like, when you come out of the pod, there's a little bird in Alien Isolation, like one of those tick birds that go and, like, put their beak into the water. Yeah. But they were they were on the Nostromo. There's two of them in, like, the opening bit of this movie. Or even you make a joke about there being scissors on the wall, and there's scissors on the wall.
That's just a love letter then to this movie.
Yeah. Well, they do say it, though. In the game, I think it's Ripley's daughter, obviously, but she says something to Samuels, I think the guy, says that the ship is very familiar. And he's like, it's the same build as the Nostromo. So it's like the same setup.
Gotcha. So if you really want to experience the art direction of this movie and the ship firsthand, just go play Alien Isolation. It's a love letter to this movie.
It really was. I've had a good time with the hour and a half we put into it.
Yeah.
But any hoozles, we found ourselves on this ship now as this crew is waking up, and you really don't, other than the little bit of text, you really don't know what their purpose is. They're like a iron or not iron, but
ore
refinery. And they're traveling back to Earth. They get woken up early, as you find out later, because there's a signal admitting something. They don't know if it's an SOS. They don't know if it's an emergency or whatever it may be.
Admitting, they don't even know if it's human.
Yeah, emitting from a planet. And it's like standard procedure that if something like that happens, they have to go investigate. So that is where we find our way to the planet. And you know what's crazy about this movie is while it is slow at first, you know, by the time they land on that planet, you're almost 40 minutes into a two-hour movie, and it's almost 2 hours on the nose. So, like, it moves pretty fast after that. Like, it's, like, all set up and kind of world-building at first, but then, because the ship is the world, or the setting, but then it goes pretty quick. It's a pretty quick, slow movie when you, like, really get down to it. And slow, not in a bad way. Like I said, it helps to the suspense of the film.
You're like slow in a Ridley Scott kind of way.
No, slow in a Ridley Scott way, he can fuck right off. It's slow in a good way. That's not Ridley Scott way. Ridley Scott way is like up there with calling someone a bad name.
For those of you who might not
like,
know. Or
it's
just
like, hey, asshole, and hey, Ridley Scott. They're on the same level.
If you haven't pieced it together yet, for some unnamed reason, Ben just doesn't like Ridley Scott,
unnamed.
Doesn't like his movies.
Tell me a good movie he's made other than Gladiator and Alien.
Blade Runner,
no.
The Martian.
No. He cheated on The Martian. It's not original.
Well, neither was Blade Runner. Neither was...
Runner, I could argue... I mean...
Legend.
Obviously. I am an asshole, but also I a lot of times think when things like this come to my head, like I just become a devil's advocate because I can, and I'll just fight to the death over it just because it's fun. And it's the unpopular opinion. And with Ridley Scott, I do believe that his movies are just not my cup of tea, and I don't think a lot of them are as good as people give him credit for. Now, Martian, I've heard is good. Have not watched it. However, it is a novel. So it's not an original idea. I want original Ridley Scott. Blade Runner, on the other hand, came from a very short story, if I'm not mistaken. Like an extraordinarily short story.
No, it's not short.
Oh, I thought it was short.
I mean, it's not that short. I've read it. It's called Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? I'm going to look up how long it is. But I read it years ago. It's by Philip K. Dick. Let's see here. It's 210 pages. It's not short, but it's
a novella.
Yeah. It's not like an exact adaptation of that. It's more like
it was the concept.
Yeah.
But Ridley Scott, he's an old man and a fool. And, I don't know. Just never.
I mean,
never done it for me.
If you really think about it, and this is my defense of whatever argument you were making against
him being boring,
Martian and Blade Runner, you said there it's based off of a book. I mean, it's not like he's writing any of these movies. He's just directing them. Like a lot of directors just direct; they don't write it. So it's like. Doesn't matter if it's based on a book or if it's an original script. The director is just directing.
Let me just come at you with this, though. Legend. Terrible movie. Terrible, terrible movie.
Look towards the Brothers Movie Factory for our review of Legend.
Hannibal. Terrible, terrible movie.
I'll agree with you there. I don't like Hannibal very much.
Black Hawk Down is okay. I've watched that once. Kingdom of Heaven. Heard bad things.
I've heard great things about Kingdom of Heaven. Where have you been?
In the Ridley Scott hate camp. Robin Food. Prometheus.
Robin Food?
Yeah, don't you remember a kid named Kissick Star? Robin
no.
Food? Yeah, he was their version of Robin Hood. He was Robin Food. He'd steal their lunch.
Okay.
Exodus, Gods and Kings. I'm just saying the man struck out more than he struck in.
How about Thelma and Louise? Classic.
Nah, I mean, Alien's a classic too.
Before he made Alien, he made a movie called The Duelist. Do you think that's about Yu-Gi-Oh?
I hope. You know what's interesting though is like where this Ridley Scott hate boils down to or comes from. What started it was I was in a film class in high school and I watched Blade Runner and I didn't understand why everyone's like, oh, it's so great and this and that and it's perfect and it's just this great idea and yada, yada, yada. And I'm like, it's really boring and slow paced and doesn't really make sense unless you watch the proper version of the film and you got to do this and that and you got to understand this and there's a paper unicorn on a desk here, which means it's probably a dream and da 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 da. Who gives a fuck? Anyways, then I watched...
You poopy mouth.
Then I watched Prometheus. And, yeah, that movie is decisive. And what's interesting is you and I fall on, which does not happen very often. This is one of the few things that we, like, wholeheartedly disagree on. Is, like, you're like, ah, Ridley Scott's not bad. And I'm like, yeah, he's kind of bad. But you like Prometheus. And I do not like Prometheus. Now, I've only seen it twice. I saw it in theaters, and I saw it when it came out on, like, Blu-ray or whatever it may have been. And I did not like it, because it is boring. And as a prequel to Alien, it's semi-pointless. Then I saw Alien Covenant in theaters, and I wanted to like it. But, again, I hated it. It was boring, and it was pretty pointless to the Alien franchise. And I think they called it Alien to sell tickets.
Yeah.
And that was frustrating to me. So, ultimately, those three movies just soured him for me. I do love Gladiator. I do need to go back and actually like watch it again. I do really love Gladiator. But, yeah, just Ridley Scott can fuck off.
Do you love Alien?
I do love Alien. I love Alien. And part of it, I think, isn't nostalgia, because I have no nostalgia for this movie. Part of it, though, I guess it wouldn't... I don't know if it would be called nostalgia. It's the... was it iconography? How iconic the movie is makes me love it. Like, Blade Runner, I'd argue, isn't... Would you argue that it's iconic, or would you argue that it's kind of like a cult classic to a degree?
Shit, that's a tough one.
Because I feel like there's a lot of people like me that are, like, not big Blade Runner fans.
Yeah, it's definitely more for the profound kind of mind. It's
hey,
more like...
What are you saying?
It's more for, like, the artiste kind of cinema lover is Blade Runner. Blade Runner is, like, the thinking man sci-fi, whereas Alien is, like, the populist sci-fi. You know, it's just survival on a spaceship. It's Jaws in space is Alien.
Jaws in space. That's terrifying.
Think about it. That's exactly what it is. And it's like Tremors.
Spooky.
It's spooky.
Movies don't get spookier than Tremors.
Tremors is Jaws in the desert.
Picture Ridley Scott directing Tremors. That movie would be boring as fuck.
I don't even remember who directed.
Not Ridley Scott. Tremors. That's why it's good. Anyways, we got
you confused me. You confused me by saying if Ridley, you're like, if Ridley Scott touches it, it sucks. But I like Alien. I like Gladiator. I like Black. I like all this stuff.
I like three movies out of like 40 that he's done.
And you haven't seen like half of them.
I've seen Blade Runner, Prometheus, and Alien Covenant, and Robin Hood apparently sucks. And
but you haven't seen Robin Hood.
And what's it called? You haven't either.
This is true, but I'm not making the argument that I have. You are.
I am, because I can. Because I like to make these arguments.
Listen, I'm not continuing this podcast any further unless we're talking bonuses.
Alien. Right. So they land to go and find this signal. And what's interesting about that to me, like them landing, again, it's really good cinematography in that, because it's very dark. Like the planet's dark and everything's just like, it's raining almost, like it's like a storm. And it's like not, I'm not saying that to that point, like sci-fi hadn't really gone that route, but it's like, everything's really gritty in that movie, right down to the planet they land on. It's like dark, damp, gritty, rocks, wrecked ship, fog. And it builds, again, to the suspense. And
it sets the mood of uneasiness.
Yeah, and then right down to even like almost the discovery of the big-ass alien in the ship. Not the xenomorph, but like the... What they end up being the creators? Is that what they're called?
They're called engineers.
With their big snouts, which they don't actually have, but that having like the hole in its chest isn't like that isn't the most like profound moment of that scene. But man, like, what is his name? Kane? It's Kane, right? Yeah,
Kane.
He goes down. The British guy goes down. Into a cave of some sort, as he says. And as he's kind of looking around, he sees all the eggs, and he kind of pokes one a little bit, and it jumps out on him. And what I love, I honestly love it, was that he pokes the egg of the facehugger, and the egg opens up. And he's looking at it, and that face hugger comes out of there real quick. It's a jump scare, really.
Mm-hmm.
It comes out of there, hits him, and then it just goes out. No scream, no yelling, no, does not settle on it. Again, builds to the suspense. You don't know what happened to him.
because no one can hear you scream in space.
Yeah, but the next time you see him, you actually see him, it's the facehugger's on him, but it's through, like, it had melted into the mask, like, in through his suit. And that's just what's so, like, great about that, is it's just, you don't know, even when they come back, you don't actually, like, see him. The two people are carrying him back, Tom Skerritt, and it was his Dallas is his character, and then I forget the girl that's with him is her name.
Her name's Lambert.
Jack Lambert with her, and
and the alien done fucked.
Yeah, and they drag him in. But like even that's suspenseful. Like they're trying to get back onto the ship. Ripley's saying no because of the quarantine procedures, and they need on the ship because he might die and all this stuff. It's just so it's really well paced, but also that all those little things tied together build suspense. You're like, what's on his face? What's on him? How is it on him? What did it do to him? How is it killing him? Like, you're asking all these questions and they're not answering them. Where, like, I feel like if this came out today, like, legit, if it came out today, they would have really focused on that thing attacking. I mean, we've seen it. We've seen it multiple times in, like, future alien movies where it focuses on those face huggers, like, grabbing onto people and people trying to get them off of them and things like that happening. Like, I think this movie did a really good job with building the suspense of that face hugger right up to its death.
Yes, indeed. I mean, its death is one way to say it. Its metamorphosis is another. Yeah, it's this. We need to break away from talking about like the slow pacing at the beginning. It's pacing in general. But it's honestly my favorite part of the movie is the build up at the beginning to that moment where the face hugger latches on and you the questions start to arise because you're asking questions, but so are the characters. They don't know the answers either. This is an alien. I was going to say a foreign creature. It's an alien. And they're
trying to figure it out. Nothing more
American.
Yeah. A harken back to our Independence Day episode.
And which comes up on one of the most iconic scenes in horror, but definitely the most iconic scene of this movie.
Oh yeah,
is the dinner scene, and I paused after the scene because we needed a breather, and the scene is called The Last Supper. How appropriate! Oh,
come on, the food ain't that bad.
Food ain't that bad, baby.
Like literally dying.
Water my ass. Get this guy some Pepto Bismol.
Oh no, not again.
Oh shit.
Waiter, yeah. Waiter, what did he have? He had the soup. That's what I had.
Change my order. What's interesting about this scene for the actors is they knew it was gonna happen. John Hurt is rigged up to this bodysuit, but what they weren't prepared for, which the Ridley Scott and others had neglected to tell the actors for the purpose of the reaction, was what was actually going to happen, how violent this scene was going to be, the initial chest burst and the blood shooting out. Real blood was used also.
Good.
Landed splurted.
Right on their lips.
Yes, exactly that. And it shocked the actors so much. Yaphet Kotto, after shooting, he went home and he just shut himself in his room, didn't talk to his wife, and just needed to be alone. He was so, like, disturbed from that scene.
Fuck with you because you might, in the moment, if it hits you in, like, the face and you're smelling that irony, like, blood, like, iron and stuff, you might be like, did it fuck up and kill him? Like,
yeah,
did that machine, like, fuck him and he died?
You never know. And, so not only was it disturbing for us viewers, but it was disturbing for the actors as well. And for me personally, that scene does bother me. It is awesome, and I love watching it. for just the excitement of it, but it is just brutal to watch. To the point when I was in eighth grade, I was a part of the Pennsylvania Junior Academy of Science.
Thank God.
Yeah. And I did a science project titled The Effects of Horror Movies on Heart Rate. I chose, I think, five or six different horror movie scenes. I would take people's resting heart rate and then their heart rate, like I'd monitor it throughout the scene. And this movie had the – I used the scene in Alien. This one had the highest heart rate increase than any of the other movies I chose. Even to science, it's that effective.
No, I mean, it's because you don't – it's the unexpected nature of it, the sheer – like up to that point, nothing violent had happened. No blood, no gore. Just that alien, but other than that, nothing.
Hey, that's not true. They tried cutting that thing's finger off, and it bled acid almost through the whole hall.
Yeah, but it didn't. I mean, nothing like that had happened that degree. And even
nothing
back
juicy
back then when this came out, like that was probably pretty hardcore for the standard audience back in the day.
For a big movie like that.
Yeah, so it was like, I don't know, it's pretty shocking. And then from there, I mean, it becomes that from there, it becomes Jaws in space. Because now it's, where is this thing on the ship, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, this movie almost never was. It was written, it was a script trying to be shipped around. It almost was picked up by legendary B filmmaker Roger Corman, and it was originally titled Star Beast, which sounds like a B movie anyway. But it wasn't until Star Wars came out and was such a success, then everyone wanted a space movie, that 20th Century Fox scooped it up as quickly as they could. So we have Star Wars to thank for this movie even being made, as a lot of movies can probably say, too.
I mean, yeah, I Alien, like, you could tell that it had some similar vibes to the sci-fi movies that came in the past, like, before it, from prior, like... It definitely, I watch it when I see like the ships and stuff. I don't think so much Star Wars as I think like 2001, Space Odyssey, which came out before this as well, right? Like I'm not making that up in my head, but the ships, I felt more like that. The cinematography felt more like that. It's not as grandiose as like Star Wars.
That's more of a Ridley Scott thing he brought to it. Star Wars, I don't know if you heard what I had mentioned, but it was because of Star Wars coming out and being such a success. Yeah. Every studio wanted to have a space movie, so they picked up this movie.
No, I heard you say, I'm saying that you can tell that it picked things from, like, it was going for a different feel, but... That's what I was saying. It's not as grandiose, but it didn't need to be because it's a wholeheartedly different movie.
I got you. Yeah.
But it is like from that point on, after that chest burster sequence, and it becomes kind of like they're searching for this thing on the ship, and they think it's just a little guy. But then shortly after it, I forget that engineer's name. Now, right. Right,
so Brett. Is that Brett?
I think
Brett.
He's looking for the cat, and he finds it and it runs away.
He finds some wet chains.
That's when he finds some wet chains and some foreskin. and picks it up with his pen. But that, even though, like, because. If I recall correctly, you know, that sequence, I remember when I first saw it for the first time, I didn't see, because you can kind of see the alien in the chains, like, before it happens, like, hanging out.
There's a extended version of this film. I think it's the director's cut. This scene in particular, it actually shows the alien coming down from the chains. Hmm. So that's like you see its full body, but it's kind of disturbing because it doesn't really climb down the chains. It floats down the chains silently, just like not a sound. It's just like slowly floating down. It's really bizarre. I'm glad they cut it.
Yeah.
And he gooses them.
He gooses them real good. But that's like the thing is like slowly picking them off. I mean, and they all die in different ways, and it is kind of like it is like that. It's like slowly and methodically picking them off. And it's really eerie because you don't know who's next to go, and especially when Tom Skerritt's character Dallas, that scene is a masterclass when he goes in. Mm-hmm. Sorry, can you hear that? My dog.
Yeah, I can hear her.
Is literally she's pushing her bowl. Her bowl is upside down, has one piece of food in it. She's pushing it to try and flip it back over, and she pushed it into her crate and is currently knocking her door shut again and again and again.
Knocking her door shut.
But when this came out, Tom Skerritt was a pretty big star, correct? And he...
I would argue he probably was the biggest star of this movie.
And he was like... People just figured he was the lead.
He does have top billing. Yeah. Yeah. He is the... I mean, what's interesting is this movie, really up to this point, there isn't like an established lead. They're all kind of interchangeable as far as like their screen time anyway.
Yeah, and that's good too, because it leads into that suspense of you don't know who's gonna get goosed next.
Yeah, so here comes Dallas, captain of the ship, our big star lead actor. He's like, I'll go in the vents and you know fry this sucker. And he goes, and they come up with a little machine that can detect motion. That was cool. But this led to maybe the most suspenseful scene of the movie, at least for me. And that's when, you know, they're monitoring where this alien could be. And he's like crawling through the vents. It's very claustrophobic. It's dark. You can't see anything unless he's shooting his flamethrower. It's rough. And then when they're like, it's right there. And he turns around and this is like, bah!
Yeah, the fast shot. It's a cat.
Yeah, that made everyone jump.
Surprise! In the house.
that got everyone. And
Dallas, how are you?
Not good.
Why haven't more people edited that? Like he turns, it's right there, and he turns, and it's like hello.
Yeah, why haven't people put Jimmy Stewart in this movie more?
You turn, he's in a chair with his legs crossed. He's just standing there, menacingly.
The chest burster came out, and it's just the alien, but Jimmy Stewart's face.
You turn from around, Vertigo. And it's Jim Carrey's Grinch. He says, "How dare you enter the Grinch's lair? The impetus, the audacity, the unmitigated gall."
That would be good. Like the egg opens, and it's a little baby Grinch.
Thank God.
Latches onto your face. And then later, when it bursts out of the chest, it's the little Grinch, who with a
Christmas.
He bursts out of the chest.
I hate it.
And then, it quickly turns into full grown Jim Carrey Grinch.
Quickly, that's another thing that's creepy, or like adds to the suspense of this film, is that like the fact that thing goes from the facehugger to little baby to big fucker real fast. And like you don't expect that. Like
you don't.
You're like, oh, he's just a little guy, and then you're like, oh, he's shed. He's probably a little bigger, but then he's just massive all of a sudden, like full grown.
Originally,
human
their plan was to do it animatronically, and that was what Ridley Scott wanted to do initially, but it got too complex, and then they stumbled upon I think he was an athlete, or no, he. I can't remember what he was. He was either an athlete or he was like in the circus, one of the two. And he was some 6'10" Nigerian and they trained him. Maybe he was a mime. I don't know.
Who was it?
Who are you? A 6'10" mime.
It was actually Sylvester. It was Sylvester Stallone and Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Stacked on each other's shoulders, and then they were 6'10".
And an overcoat.
And he was just very thin. He was just so unique looking that they're like, if we put him in the suit, he might be able to portray exactly what we're looking for. And damn it, they did it. Because this alien, the look of him is just so unique. Nothing is ever – like if I was making an alien movie, especially like back in the day, I would never have thought to make it look like this.
No, like a penis.
And you know, that was part of the design, like everything from the egg and how it opened is kind of like a vagina, and then the face hugger, and it had like the sacs, and it has the projectile, like the tongue, which is like a penis and balls. And then even after that, the alien, it opens its mouth, and a little mouth comes out like a penis.
Was that meant to make people, because that sort of thing just makes people naturally uncomfortable, because we're like trained from a young age to not talk about, like, not, you know, actively be like talking about those sorts of things is not like I don't know.
Well, it's a very intimate thing.
Yeah,
right?
I guess that's a better way of putting it. Yeah.
It's a very intimate thing. It's a very vulnerable thing, and it's shown in a very violent and aggressive way. And yes, that was also the other thing they were trying to go for, is like kind of like a rape.
Rape and, of the natural world,
I guess. And I mean, that's also one of the reasons why they chose for the alien to kill off men first. But yeah, rape was definitely something that was talked about in like how this creature attacks people.
It's like unexpected and forced,
and that's why very phallic designs, very violent, very like the association with those things is very just like one of the worst things. So they're like, let's put that into this like alien horror sci-fi movie. And it was portrayed like I said by H.R. Giger in his art designs. Funny enough, when he was going through customs, they confiscated his artwork because they thought they were photographs, and they're like, these are too disturbing. There's something has to be going on with these photographs. And he's like, what the hell? Like, where would I have ever photographed these other than in hell?
Stupid so, yeah. people.
Interesting. But yeah, that was a big part of this creature design.
No, I mean, it has become, and that's a question I wanted to ask, and I'll just ask it now because we're on the design of it, but do you think, if you had, I'm sure it's top five, but I'm asking for, it, would you think overall, is this the most iconic alien design across all cinema?
You put me on the spot with that one. So I would say no.
That's like Predator, Chewbacca, technically, Yoda.
I would say no. I would either go, like E.T., Chewbacca, or even
Yoda.
Or I said E.T. I was going to say Yoda,
E.T., Chewbacca, E.T., Yoda, E.T. again, and E.T.
That's Mac probably and me. I'd go. Mechagodzilla.
Mechagodzilla and Space Godzilla.
And then the Xenomorph.
Yeah.
On the spot, that's probably what I would say. But it's up there.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I said five. Probably top five. I mean, Star Wars, just because of the massive... you and I aren't... I'm probably more so than you, but we're not the biggest like Star Trek fans in the world. But you have things like a Klingon on there and... Vulcan, and you have some big time alien races in that as
well. You know what's funny is like, yeah, it'd definitely the Xenomorph would be in the top five, but if you ask any person this, they'd be like, oh, you know, like top five aliens in cinema, people would say the alien from Alien.
Yeah.
Alien.
The Xenomorph.
the association with the word alien. And I mean, that's why they titled the movie as is, because it was originally called Star Beasts. Yeah. And the writer renamed it because as he's writing it, he noticed that they were saying aliens so often in his script. And he really liked it because it's both a noun and an adjective.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's easier. It's more marketable for sure than Star Beasts.
Yeah. Come see Star Beasts. No one can hear you scream in space.
Like Alien is like such a perfect title. Like, kind of reminds me of like Halloween. Like up to that point, no movie had been named Halloween. No movie had been named Alien.
It builds to that suspense too, because it's like, what is it? It's an alien. Well, what's that mean exactly?
We're gonna find out with you as we get picked off one by one.
Exactly, which is great. There's not a lot of like. There's not a lot of dramatic irony in this movie, which is like where you know what the character doesn't. You're kind of in, you're at a loss too for most of this film.
Even to the point of old Ashy Baby being an android.
Sperm-filled android.
See, there you go again. Maybe, I don't know if that's the case, if that was the thought, but yeah, it might be.
And that's disturbing. Like, Ash, the medical... he was a medical engineer?
Medical officer.
A medical officer, yeah. He kind of had some ulterior motives because he was an android sent there by the... Is it Weyland Yutani? Is that...
Yeah, sounds about right.
Corp. But did it... They can really get, like... It's more speculative as to, like, why. He just had his purpose was to, like, observe this life, right?
Is to bring it back.
Yeah.
Bring it back to Earth and to be whatever. Crew's expendable. That's their top priority.
Yeah. And how did they know about it? Does it really get into that ever? Did I miss
Honestly,
it?
Honestly, I don't think
they did. They're just kind of like, get it.
They knew it was out there. They sent this crew on this trip to get the ore and on its way back. Unless they intercepted the same signal. But I don't know. And deciphered it as a warning. They had to have known prior. I don't know.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. It is interesting. And that lends itself to Aliens with her relationship with the android in that movie as well.
Right. In the sequel, right out the gate, she just doesn't trust Bishop's his name.
Yeah.
Because he's an android, just because of her experience with a corporate android in this film. And Ash and his reveal, very gross.
Yeah.
I don't like looking at that either.
Best cinema death in history of an android?
Probably not. I would say that might go to Blade Runner.
That or is the Terminator an android technically?
No, he's a cyborg. I would say the what's his name? Shit, Rucker Hauer. At the end of Blade Runner. Probably the most iconic android death. Anywho, yeah, when they knock Ash's head off and all that gunk spraying everywhere, and they set his head up to keep talking, and all that milk's just pouring out of his mouth. Yeah. Yucko, sucko. And even more disturbing when they finally like shut him off or whatever, he has like that permanent grin on his face. Ugh, I don't like it. They torch him. I'm like, thank God.
All meant to make you feel uncomfortable.
It did its job.
I think ultimately then at the end, it comes down to old Ripley and, I keep wanting to call the cat Binks from Halloween, fucking Hocus Pocus.
Yeah. It's Jonesy.
Jonesy. Beans. My friend's cat Beans. old Jonesy and Ripley are left and they're kind of trapped in the escape pod with the alien, and you don't really... I always felt that was weird, because it's like, not that it's anticlimactic, it's more realistic, but this thing has like literally been like tearing through everyone, and it's like she finally escaped, and then it's kind of like realizes that it's right there, but it's kind of like sleeping. or it's like,
yeah,
it's just kind of chilling. Like, that's like, his downfall.
I'm tired.
Yeah, it's kind of like Godzilla in the original Godzilla. Like, he's just like, I got a nap, destroying the cities, busy work. He's like, I just had all these crew members for dinner. I need a quick napsy poo.
Yeah, yeah. He had a carb overload.
So, not that it's anticlimactic. I guess we're just kind of cinematically so attuned to like this final stand, more akin to what the sequel is like, where get away from her, you bitch. Like, it's a big final standoff. Where in this movie, it's really not. It's a very soft ending, but that still leaves you with a lot of dread as she just kind of floats through space.
Yeah, it's just continuing on with the suspense. Is this thing going to lash out in any second? Is it going to stay where it is? Where I picked up on it, yeah, it was resting. It's probably really warm or hot where it was. It likes hot environments. The ship Nostromo was hot. And she was in the escape pod at this point. So it might have been just chilling in the warm pipes there. But it does crawl out after she kind of steams it out and blasts that sucker into space.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the most overkill explosions also prior when she does put on the self-destruct of the Nostromo, which is just a hauling ship, right? It's hauling 20 million tons, whatever, so a lot of ore, shit ton of ore.
Yes.
And she self-destructs it to hopefully kill the alien now that she's the only one left. And it explodes, right? Not once, but three times.
Hey.
It blows up.
I had to be sure.
Yeah, like overkill of anything. Like, why did it need to? How did it explode three times?
Blow up!
It probably had a oxygen canister in its mouth.
Yeah, the ship did. Yeah,
I want to watch Alien versus Jaws. See who wins. Alien would win.
I want to see Alien put a face hugger on Jaws and have a shark xenomorph burst out.
You took my Alien versus Jaws concept and applied it to a whole different monster. This is
gave it a whole dangerous. New meaning I never dreamed of.
This is wrong. I'd be swimming underwater like a submarine, Mr. Wayne. Like a submarine.
Sure.
But yeah, no, this movie ultimately definitely does a phenomenal job just keeping you constantly on edge, constantly spent like in a form of flux of suspense, even from the get-go of not nothing happening. It's
building. It's always building.
Yeah. Similar, not that they're the same, but it was the best modern example I could think of. There are more modern, but like kind of like how Blair Witch is, where people think it's boring, but it's like constantly building suspense and doing nothing really. Mm-hmm. Similar to that feel for me, where it's just like constantly building that suspense, but really not doing much.
What movie did you say?
Blair Witch.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
As a modern example, that was like of suspense building. I don't know. Is that wrong?
No, I suppose you're right. That's like, that's like putting potatoes and ice cream in your mouth and saying they're the same thing.
And they are, aren't they? Put enough sugar in it. It's all edible.
They're both gushy. I guess you're right. That's Alien in a nutshell. Great movie, classic. I think it's a masterpiece in cinema, not only for the genre, just in movie making in general. Just the art of it is masterclass. The suspense of it is masterclass. It did give us Sigourney Weaver, who went on to be very, very big star, but she kind of brought like the creation of the character of Ripley kind of brought on the first ever female action star. And so that's significant to movie history. And you know what's kind of funny is the actress who played Lambert, she was originally Ripley. She got cast as Ripley, and Sigourney Weaver got cast as Lambert. And that's what it was until the scripts went out. Scripts got shipped out to everyone, and the actress who was going to be Ripley got her script, and it said Lambert on it. She's like, she called in. She's like, oh, no, I'm Ripley. I think you sent me the wrong one. They're like, no, they made some changes, and they decided they think you'd be better fit for Lambert. Can you imagine just like...
You're the star of the film, and then get your fucking...
like, fuck. Like, Sigourney Weaver was, like, big star after this. Not that that meant this lady would have been, if she, you know, whatever. That doesn't really matter. It's not like this movie made Sigourney Weaver. Sigourney Weaver made Sigourney. But, yeah.
This is one of her first big breaks.
It certainly was. I think she had been in stuff prior, but this was definitely her, like, biggest role to date.
There is no Ripley, only Zool.
Yeah. That movie came out 5 years after this, believe it or not.
Hey, how about Jesus had a thing for monsters?
In space.
Let's do the Gatekeeper versus the Alien. Who wins?
Is the Gatekeeper... How about the Keymaster versus the Alien?
Is that the one that's...
That's Rick Moranis.
Okay. He'll just talk the alien to death. Yeah. He'll be like, the alien will walk in and be like, everyone, this is the xenomorph. His taxes are this. He's so good in the Ghostbusters. Okay.
He's so good in everything.
All right, well. So, this portion of the show, this is where we usually take the film we just watched and we submit it to the factory. And that's where we take that film and we imagine what it would look like if it came out today, who would direct it, who would compose it, who would star. Same movie, same story, just different booking, modern era. Now, the thing about Aliens, or Alien, rather, I stopped myself in that. But the thing about Alien is, as we've said it a couple times on this, the director's really boring, so it doesn't matter who directs it. It could be directed by a stick figure. Wouldn't matter. probably have more personality. Anyways.
You are wrong.
There's not, while the music does play, we didn't really talk about that. The music, there's not like a lot of music. It's more like sounds, right? Throughout the movie. It's not like straight music.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of music. But
yeah, it's more...
It has an iconic theme. It's like, bloom, 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 bloom.
Yes. sounds.
Jerry Goldsmith, damn it.
I guess you could say that about literally what I said was probably the dumbest way anyone could ever describe music. Like, it's basically just sounds.
Just sounds told like in like different pitches.
Yeah, just put together sounds.
Different instruments, a bunch of noise.
But
put together rhythmically, I guess.
Yeah. Fuck. Anyways, and then the cast and crew, as we said, that Tom Skerritt was one of the biggest stars in this film at the time. Sigourney Weaver really hadn't done much stuff yet. A lot of the actors involved hadn't. It wasn't that they were like. Would you say they weren't really like big movie stars at the time? Tom Skerritt was really big.
Most of them were unknowns.
Yeah, so it kind of puts us in a rough spot in terms of our factory because we can't be like, who do you want to play the engineer that dies first? And be like, Chris Pratt. That wouldn't make any sense. It could lend itself to the whole nature of like who's the star because everyone's a big name, and it'd be kind of shocking to see a big name get killed off. But instead of doing a factory, our traditional factory here this week, we're going to talk about Alien as a franchise. You have Alien, the original, and people love it because it's probably one of the most iconic, if not the most iconic sci-fi horror movie, right? And then you have Aliens, its sequel, which could be considered one of the most iconic sci-fi action movies. Because would you say Aliens is more sci-fi action than it is sci-fi horror?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's exactly it. You said Alien, sci-fi horror, Alien, sci-fi action.
Yeah, and so you have these two iconic, beloved to each their own right.
And then you have Alien 3, which has a really cool idea and setting, but the execution isn't quite there. That's directed by the guy who did 7, right?
Yeah, David Fincher. And that is a prime example of a movie that had producers' grubby little fingers all mushed in there, and they couldn't agree on the same movie.
And it's such a cool idea, like a prison planet. Like, that's a really neat idea for an alien film. Then there's Resurrection, which kind of dove into some weirder ideas of cloning and human alien hybrids. The franchise got away from itself at that point. Then you come back with Alien versus Predator, which I saw in theaters as a young lad with our friend. I believe we saw it with our friend Andrew. Did we not?
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
That was a long time ago.
The thing about that, though, is that movie is a sci-fi horror movie that is PG-13. And that is also wrong, right? That is wrong on a lot of levels.
This feels like a sin.
Yeah, and it's not that the action in that movie is honestly pretty good, but it could have been so much better.
That movie's definitely a guilty pleasure for me.
Yeah, it was, for whatever reason, I have an antenna. I use an antenna for TV, and there's like one of those random cable channels, like doesn't have a name. I think it was called like stadium.net or something like that. I was flipping through one night, and Alien vs. Predator was just on. I'm like, fuck it. And I watched it.
On a UHF station.
That was kind of what it was like. But then there was Alien vs. Predator Requiem, which has some cool scenes. I will give it that, but is not a coherent movie.
It's garbage.
It is pretty garbage. But there's one scene. Oh, man. It's pretty scary, actually, the one scene.
I don't even remember anything.
There's
about
like a little girl in her bedroom, and she's like, there's a monster outside my window. And it's like the alien like jumps through the window and like kills the parents. Like there's like the lady that's a cop or like a former Marine officer or something, but it that's good. The alien predator hybrid's interesting. yeah, that movie's not that great. And then we get Prometheus, which is very Prometheus and Alien Covenant. While there are lots of people that do like that movie, I'd say it's still decisive, or divisive rather. A lot of people don't like it, and a lot of people do like it. So I really think that most people agree that Alien and Aliens are the ones that are good.
Don't forget Covenant.
Hey, piss off. If we were gonna continue on this franchise, say you're just ignoring everything else after Aliens, and you're making Alien 3 all over again. Aliens is two S's. What would you do? What would you do different? What would your story be?
Kind of shit. Well, I guess, and this isn't, this the purpose of this isn't to, I guess, bash on Alien 3. Do you want to make it like remaking Alien 3, or do you want to make it like we're coming out with a new Alien movie? What is it?
See, we've kind of backed ourselves in the corner, because then we're falling into, like, Halloween 2018 territory, where, like, all these other ones, you're going to forget all about that? Forget all about that crap? Focus on golf. like, that's kind of what it'd be like. It'd be like, Halloween's the only movie, and then there's this one. Ignore the other eight that came out between them.
And Godzilla did the same thing.
True.
A bunch of times.
And you could do that with this, but it's almost too fresh with, like, Alien Covenant. Coming out 2016?
Yeah, sounds about right. 17, I think, maybe.
Yeah, but it's just a little too recent in my head. How would you have... we'll just say this. We'll cancel off all other Alien movies. How would have you liked that franchise to go? Like, after Aliens? Would you like to go to Earth? I personally think Earth would be a little overkill, because while it would give you a lot of opportunity, it gets away from that feeling of you're trapped. You know, Alien's a big, Earth is a big place. So it doesn't really lean into that dread of being like stuck.
So I'm glad I allowed you to go on that rant. Cause I was like, are we remaking 3 or making a new one? And if you were asking me like just make a new one, I would have pulled the Halloween 2018. I'd be like, all right, my new one is forgetting that the other ones ever happened. So, yeah, I would pick up where the second one left off, and I would
kill off Newt and the guy.
Yeah, I would not do that. That is exactly what I would change. I would, because that's how three opens. Basically, the whole purpose of the second one was to, for Sigourney Weaver, or Ripley rather, to protect Newt, the little girl who is now her, like her new adopted daughter, or her daughter figure, and a potential love interest in, I don't remember the character's name. Michael Biehn plays him. They kill him off, like, in the opening scene of the third one. So, like, everything that they were working for in the second one was just instantly negated in the sequel. And that just leaves a nasty pit in my stomach. So I'd retcon that. Not even retcon. This is a brand new movie, damn it.
Yeah.
So I would have those two survive for sure. I do like the idea of the prison planet. However, I would have it take place on Earth. They do. Ripley makes it back after a long journey home. She makes it back. Something would have to happen. Like, cause I'm saying this movie's coming out today. Something happens and in their ship and they do age on their trip, or she makes it home. They kind of live happily ever after. Now it's like so many years later.
They come home and it's like Planet of the Apes.
Yeah. I want to make it that this company that maybe she has spent her whole life trying to take down has harvested xenomorphs and they're breaking out. So now it can be contained in that it needs to take place in one little area, or else these xenomorphs are going to break out and be let loose on Earth and take it over. And Ripley can't let that happen to something she strives so hard to keep safe, whether it's her family, it's her life, or it's the future. So it would still be, yes, in a contained spot. It would just take place on Earth, I believe. Maybe a facility. But yeah, and I would like for it to, at this point, kind of harken back to Alien and be more on the suspenseful side as opposed to the heavy action side.
Yeah. I personally was thinking about it, and I think something that would have been cool, I'm not saying that this is for sure, I like your thought on that. I would go with that. If I was going to continue on the franchise, if I was instead going to flesh the franchise out more, something that I might find interesting would be actually a prequel set on the colony that Aliens takes place on, basically leading up to like how that all went down. Think about that, like a whole colony getting taken down by these aliens. It would be almost like a zombie movie in a sense. Like you could follow a family, you could follow Newt's family, but like trying to survive, and there's just aliens everywhere, and it's like they don't know what's happening. It's I think that would be a really fleshed out horror movie if it was just like, it would be like more, like I said, more like a zombie film, leaning into that colony and like what happened to them and everything like that. I think that would be very good as well.
Yeah, that's a cool idea.
Yeah, oh, I'm chock full of them, unlike a certain director I know. Always borrowing books and shit.
Jeez.
But indeed. I think there's a lot of room for that franchise to grow, and unfortunately, I just didn't. I think Ridley Scott didn't. I just don't think the direction he took with Prometheus and Alien Covenant was what the mainstream would have wanted. And I think that's more what I was looking for, sadly, was more of a mainstream Alien, where he went more of the thinking man kind of feel.
I mean, that's really why I did like Prometheus. I did like Alien Covenant. Actually, my least favorite part of Alien Covenant was the xenomorph stuff.
Yeah. You liked all the stuff with David.
Yeah, I did. But, you know, honestly, and this might be music to your ears, or maybe sound to your ears. I think, honestly, for the Alien franchise to continue and to have success and be brought back to prominence would be for Ridley Scott to exit the franchise.
Are they not working on another?
They're working on a show. Aren't they working on a show?
Ridley Scott's doing a show on HBO Max called Raised by Wolves.
No, they're going to make an alien show, but it's not going to have xenomorphs in it. Yeah.
Okay.
So that's what I'm thinking of. I think, and not to
compare it to... So it's Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
Not to compare it to this, but it's just the most recent example I can pull from that it was successful. But they need to do something like the Mandalorian in like Jon Favreau and who's the other guy?
Dave Filoni,
where they're fans of a franchise, but not only that, they're excellent filmmakers. They need to allow someone who's a fan of the Alien franchise, especially those first two, and just like who's a great filmmaker that can put together a continuation.
You know what's hilarious about what you just said is the fact that that's like not a radical idea, but that's a less common idea. Like, let's take a franchise or a story or an IP that people love, and let's give it to someone who doesn't necessarily understand it or doesn't actually even isn't a fan themselves of it.
You see that a lot.
Yeah, and I don't understand. You know, like Mandalorian. Yeah, you gave it to Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau. They're huge Star Wars fans. I'm trying to think of other ones that like did that recently. Because I think like Sonic the Hedgehog, they brought on board the guy that worked on like Sonic Mania, the game. They like, brought him on board to help out. and different things like that. But then you have moments like this Monster Hunter movie that just came out that's like hot garbage and has no relation to its actual IP because Paul W.S. Anderson is insane and needs to be stopped. but it's just kind of interesting that that is a different idea. Like, give it to a fan of the series. That's like, why wouldn't you do that in the first place? You know, The Witcher,
years ago,
like The Witcher TV show, it was just all made by even I don't know if you knew this. Henry Cavill is like a humongous nerd. I don't know if you knew that.
I did this.
And he loved The Witcher before he got the part of Geralt. Like, he loved everything about it. He said he actually was playing. He missed the call from Zack Snyder that he got Superman. He missed that call. He ignored it purposely, he said, because he was playing World of Warcraft. He heard his phone ring and he ignored it because he was playing World of Warcraft.
I'm like,
why can't I play World of Warcraft, look like you, have your chin, and be able to be a nerd?
Hey, you can.
I'm not 6 foot six. You ever looked at Henry Cavill and you're like, how do you exist?
Years ago, filmmaker, director Neil Blomkamp, who created like District 9 and Elysium, he pitched an idea for a new Alien movie, and he's a big Alien fan. I mean, you can tell from films like
you're too close to the project.
Yeah, you can tell just in, like, his art direction and just his style. And him making an Alien franchise movie would be brilliant. And you should look it up sometime, like some of the concept art that he had put together for his idea for an Alien movie. It's awesome. It would have brought back Sigourney Weaver. It would have brought back Michael Biehn. And it was going to be a really cool idea. And he got shut down. I don't know why. They just decided to go in a different direction. That was a long time ago. That had been like 5, 6, 7 years ago. But yeah, so I don't know. I don't know why it doesn't happen more often. That's definitely the more political side, the business side of the movie making business. But we're not in the business. We're just the factory. So we're just the fans. We are just the spokespeople. We're just two guys, speaking on what we like, what we want to see, and just throwing our ideas out there into the ether for the spit listeners to take that moisture into their ears, that sound, that music.
I didn't like that moisture part. Anyways, you ready to wrap her up here?
I am. I have one question before we go.
Okay.
Do you like... This is the question.
Okay.
Do you like Alien or Aliens better?
Apples and oranges, sadly. Because while they are from the same franchise, they're not comparable because they're completely different movies.
That's a cop-out answer. I'm asking, what do you like better? That's like someone, you may ask, do you like Lord of the Rings or Star Wars more? You'll say Star Wars, won't you? You won't be like, can't do it.
Can't do it. They're different movies. Personally, I think that it's hard because I think Aliens is a better film, but I think Alien is... It's kind of like how with, like, New Hope, Star Wars New Hope is my favorite Star Wars movie, even though I know it's not the best Star Wars movie. Part of it is that it's the original, and that's what makes me like it more. I think Aliens is better, and I enjoy watching Aliens more. I've seen Aliens more than I have Alien, so I'll probably say Aliens. Which I'm sure is your answer.
As I've gotten older, I think I like Alien more. However, you will find me watching Aliens more often. I think Aliens is more fun to watch, and I think Ripley comes into her own fully as a character, has a very satisfying ending. But like I said, as I've gotten older, I've just appreciated the first film so much more. I like the horror aspect of it, and it's something I've been craving for the franchise ever since. But I love me some Jim Cameron, and I like Alien action.
Jimmy C.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Jimmy C and Jimmy S.
Yeah. Jimmy Stewart's the voice of the little guy coming out of the mouth saying hello. I'm gonna grab you, eat you. Eat you with my little mouth, and then I'll bite you with my bigger mouth. But anywho, that is the show. We hope you enjoyed it. If you liked what you heard, be sure to check us out over on Audioboom. That's our first primary source. That's where we're posting the podcast to first, and then subsequently it gets shipped out everywhere else. So Spotify, Google Play, Amazon, wherever you get your podcasts, you find us there. You can also find us over on Twitter. We're at The Bros Movie Pod. That's where we post in links to the show, clips, things that we'll be watching, memes that Gus makes, etc., etc. You can also, alongside this episode, we'll be starting to release a couple episodes here every now and again. I'm going to hopefully release 1 to 2 episodes a week of it, of Gus and I's playthrough of Alien Isolation. That, you can find that at You and a Guest Gaming on YouTube. It's You and a Guest Gaming on YouTube. We're going to be doing Alien Isolation playthroughs. Real short episodes, just about 10 minutes or so. Real fun little time we had with that game. And we're going to keep on doing that slowly as we move on. And this is just kind of kicked that off. So You and a Guest Gaming over on YouTube. You can also find us on Facebook.
Hey, go to Facebook, type in the Brothers Movie Factory. We will be there. I like to make memes of the things we're watching each and every week, as well as include links to the things Ben mentioned a moment ago, like Audioboom, Spotify, Twitter, and that.
So that is the show. We hope you enjoyed it. But until next week, brothers.
Brothers.
Brothers.